We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Clear Weapons Program. NPR's Louisa Lim says Kim Jong-il is in Moscow for talks. A spokesman for Russia's president says Kim has expressed a willingness to stop nuclear testing.
The North Korean leader met Russia's president Dmitry Medvedev at a Siberian military base near Lake Baikal. According to a Russian spokeswoman, Kim Jong-il said North Korea would stop producing and testing nuclear arms if the six-party talks resumed. That process has been stalled for almost 3 years. Kim said Pyongyang would attend talks without preconditions. The two countries also made progress on a Russian proposal to ship natural gas to South Korea through North Korea. Kim Jong-il visited an aircraft factory and a supermarket and cruised on Lake Baikal. Kim told the Russian leader that his visit had been very fun. After the meeting, Medvedev said it had been open and substantive, leaving him full of positive feelings.
This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Brushfire Records, presenting the new album from Z Avi, Ghostbird, available at Starbucks and other music retailers.
Programs on WILL are made possible by Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have back on the program once again Phil Nixon. He's an entomologist. He works in the Department of Crop Sciences at University of Illinois, and he specializes in dealing with insect pest problems in the home. Can be inside, so if you have a bug that is causing trouble in the house, call in, tell us about that. We can get that taken care of. Or if it's something that's causing problems outside, whether this is something that's attacking an ornamental plant, maybe it's something that you planted hoping that you can eat it, whatever it is, just, you know, give us the best description that you can, and he will suggest what you can do to deal with it. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Hey, thanks very much.
Glad to be here.
We appreciate it. Did I get that right this time?
Crop yes, sciences? You did. Oh, yes, good. You did. Yeah. I didn't even notice. Didn't even notice it. Didn't even hit, throw a warning flag, so you must have got the
okay.
Right.
Okay, must have got the right identification.
Well, I had them change it on the website, so that may have helped.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're always happy to have you here, and I know that we'll get a lot of calls from people who have questions. Well, you suggested maybe among the things we could talk about, perhaps we could talk a little bit about cicada. And the kind that you're thinking maybe people might have questions about are the kind that we see every year. They're called the dog day cicada.
Or sometimes annual cicada. These are an assemblage of species. For those of you that want to be scientific, they're in the genus Tibicin, whereas the periodical cicada are in Magicicada. There are several species, and they have various lengths of life cycles. We feel that most of them are probably anywhere from 4 to 7 years in length. Some people think as little as 2 years. But there's a number of different species that come out, and they come out during the dog days of summer, typically second half of July through into September. And they're singing primarily in the evening or at night and make a wheeze sound in the trees. And this year we seem to have a higher abundance of them than we normally have. And I've gotten some questions about it, and I think probably part of it is because you have a number of species that some of them come out every year, and they have different generation lengths, it may be the case that you've got several species that just seem to be coinciding to come out at the same time this year. Commonly, when you have a group of species like this, there's one that's going to be dominant for one reason or another. That one may be out this year. Another thing that's a factor on them is that they will tend to tunnel up through the up towards the top, up from the roots that they feed on in the ground as nymphs for most of the years of their lifespan. But when they get up towards they will move up towards the surface several weeks before they come out typically. And if that soil is dry, some of those are likely to not make it. And with the high rainfalls we had this spring, that may have helped more of them survive when they were finally getting ready to come out. So these may be all factors. These are all suppositions on my part. We at the University of Illinois do not take tax money and spend it trying to study bugs that don't make any difference economically to people. So I get calls like that. I go, well, you guys ought to be on top of all of this. Well, you know, there's, you know, we're looking at about 12,000 different species of insects. We don't spend money on most of them. So a lot of this is all kind of supposition on our part. But these are all hypotheses that have gained true in other bugs that we have studied more. So that's probably what's happening, but, you know, I got a call, you know, it was actually a Chicago radio station that they were down here in, I think they were in Bloomington trying to do an advertisement, and they wanted to have it around the forest, and they had to stop and pull back and go back to Chicago
because the cicadas were so loud.
I says, don't you have directional mics? Well, they were overwhelming the direction according to the sound man. I go, well, come earlier in the day. Pick an area with smaller trees. You'll probably be in good shape. So they're going to shot it. But, you know, it's to people that are just saying, well, there just seems to be a lot out there. It's hard to hear your people talk to each other and so on. So well, it might be something that people are kind of interested in. I'm kind of stepping over into May Barenboim territory here, but that's all right. Okay. You know, it's been a couple of weeks since he's been on. So
Well, let me give our telephone number, by the way, if you have a question for Phil, 333-9455. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, toll free 800-222-9455. And also, if you'd like, you can send an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, since we're just talking about cicada now, I'm curious, when they get to the adult stage, the stage where they're singing and mating, how long do they live once they get to that point?
Well, generally, what will happen is that the I would assume that these cicadas are probably living about the same length as the periodical cicadas, which the males are out for about 2 to 3 weeks and singing, which is where they were from about this location south this year in the state. Lots of them around Decatur and the Sangamon River. Muhammad had a lot of them out and along the Sangamon and so on this year. And then the females will hang around for probably another 2 or 3 weeks after that laying eggs. And so probably that's what you're looking at here. However, the assemblage of different species are probably coming out at a little different times. And so they're staggered a little bit. So you end up with a season of singing males that's running probably a month to 6 weeks, but it's probably different species singing at different, coming out at different times and singing. The males sing to attract the females to them for mating. And these are relatively large insects. These are going to be 2.5 inch long, heavy bodied insects with clear wings that have green and black and maybe some other colors on them. And they sit up in the trees and they are quite secretive, unlike the periodical cicadas we had earlier where you could walk right up to them, pick them off a branch. They were down low and so on. These are quite secretive. They're normally fairly high, and if they see something looking at them, they'll walk around the other side of a branch and shut up until you quit singing until you go elsewhere, and then they'll start again. So they're pretty cagey because, the more obvious you are, the more likely you are to be a bird dinner. So that's probably their major predator. So there's not near as many of them out, and so they as the periodical cicadas. Periodical cicadas come out with the idea, you know, there's so many of us, eat all you want. There's more where they came from, and you just can't possibly eat us all, and that's the way we do it. These guys come out in for the lower numbers, and they're cagier.
Right. What with the ones that at least that we hear around our house, they seem to start singing, say in the mid late afternoon,
right.
And then when it gets truly dark, they stop.
Right, pretty well stop.
Pretty well stop.
And that's when the katydids tend to take over, and the crickets. And the crickets are just starting. I'd gotten a call a couple of weeks ago and. What was wrong? How come we're hearing crickets? And my response was, oh, you're a little early. But the crickets I've been noticing are starting to happen. And then we have some katydids, which are large green grasshoppers that several species like to sit up in the tops of the trees. And they will sing about the time the cicadas stop. And they may go till 2 in the morning, some species do. Yeah. It's kind of upsetting if you've got the windows open and you're, and there's a katydid sitting right outside your window.
They can
sing
be very loud.
Yeah, I've had, over my career, I've had 3 or 4 people that have called me and then played the tape that they recorded from their bedroom.
They've said,
this is really loud. Yeah, what is this thing? And then we have other katydids that sing during the daytime. And that's when you get out into a prairie area or a natural area, there's a high-pitched trill that you hear, and that's katydids. And then in a wooded area during the daytime, you'll hear a very high-pitched trill. If you're a guy, something you may have remembered when you were a kid and don't anymore, it's so high that a lot of men lose their high frequency ability later in their life. But it's a very high pitch, and it's just almost a steady. There's enough of them out there at this time of year that it's something we tend to actually. When I grew up, you just kind of associated that noise with being out in nature, and it's crickets and katydids primarily.
All right. Our guest this morning in this hour of focus is Phil Nixon. He's an entomologist, and occasionally he's here on the program to try to help out with insect pest problems around the home. Could be something in the house, could be something in the home landscape. If you have a problem, well, give us a call. Tell us about it. Give us the best description, and he will tell you what you can do to get rid of it. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And the email, too, if you'd like to send a question that way. It's will-talk@illinois.edu. Bagworms. You want to talk about bagworms?
Yeah, well, bagworms are something that we've got quite a few of them this year. We normally look at those insects hatching out around the middle of June. This year, they were about that time. And what they do is that they will hatch out. The females are wingless and stay within the bag. The bags are spindle-shaped. About 1.25 inches long, when fully grown, and they're brownish. They are silk bags that the caterpillar covers with foliage from the tree, which then of course dies and turns brown. And they feed on a wide range of needled evergreens as well as broadleaf plants, broadleaf trees and shrubs. And these eggs will hatch out in around the middle of June. And what the young caterpillars do is they will climb to the top of a tree, spin out a couple, 3 feet of silk, and blow from tree to tree for about 2 weeks. This is the way they get around. Since mom doesn't fly or even come out of the bag that she makes, this is the only way the population disperses. The males are winged moths, but they're just spreading sperm, not spreading kids, okay? So it's got to have something. In order for a population to move, you got to have something that's moving the eggs, and the females have to move. Or the young have to move, and in this case, the young move, and they blow from tree to tree for about 2 weeks. So we recommend treatment typically in the early part of July in this part of the state, a little bit later in the northern part of the state. And what we find is that many times we get people that are not paying a whole lot of attention until about now, and they notice that their spruce or their arborvitae or their eastern red cedar, all of a sudden the top is all brown and looks like it's dying, and they find these bags on it. They get all bent out of shape. The bagworms will kill the tree if they strip enough of the branches and so on, or kill individual branches that they strip. On needled evergreens, deciduous plants like oaks and crab apples they'll feed on as well, but those will come back without any trouble. But we get people who call up about this time of year and want to know what they can do. I've been getting a number of calls that way. And generally what happens is that the bagworms will pupate, go from the larval stage to pupal stage, or a cocoon stage, somewhere between the middle of August and the early part of September. And right now they appear to not have pupated yet. It depends on the season. And you can still get good control with that. We normally recommend Bacillus thuringiensis kerstockii, BTK. But when you get very large caterpillars like we have now, that is less effective than some of the synthetic pyrethroids. And cyfluthrin is effective, which is available as Bayer Advanced Multi-Insect Killer. And also permethrin is effective, which is sold as 8-insect spray and some other brand names. These sprayed on the trees will kill these large caterpillars. Or another way you can do is you can hand pick them off if a tree's not so short that you can't do it. Don't drop them under the ground. They just walk back up onto the tree. You need to make sure you throw them in a plastic bag or something. Throw them in the trash. stomp the bejeebers out of them, whatever. People do strange things when they get bugs in their hands. So so that's essentially even control. And if you don't get around to it, every other bag sitting on that tree all winter long will be a female bag on an average, and she'll have 300 to 1,000 eggs inside. So anytime you can pick one off and destroy it, you're eliminating that many kids next year.
Okay. Well, we have a caller here, and others are certainly welcome. If you have a question about insect problems around the home, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And here is a caller on line one in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Hey, this is Dylan for Champaign. I was just wondering why we had so many fruit flies this summer in homes and also restaurants and other businesses.
Fruit flies are going to be very small insects, typically about a 16th of an inch long or so, maybe an eighth of an inch. They're medium brown in color, have red eyes and clear wings, and they are going to be associated with decaying fruits or vegetables of any sort. And the and what you end up with there is that they'll be attracted this time of year, as we tend to have ripening vegetables and buying fruits or ripening fruits inside, and they will be attracted to these items and start feeding on them. The larval stage is only about 2 weeks long, and so you get flies coming out very quickly, and so pupal stage is about 10 days or so. So within a month you're having a new generation, and that really increases these numbers and becomes very, very numerous. So this is probably why a lot of them show up this time of year every year. They will live in any type of decaying vegetation that's moist, and so they will live in improperly draining garbage disposals, trash compactors, stems from flowers that have been sitting too long in a vase, and they'll feed. And an important thing to realize physiologically about a fruit or vegetable is from a vegetation standpoint or a botany standpoint, there really is no such thing as ripe. You're either the vegetable or fruit is either green or it's rotting from a physiological standpoint. And we like to have a point in the early stages of rotting, so to speak, that we like to call ripe, okay? So from a fruit fly standpoint, once it becomes ripe, it is rotting and it is attractive to them. And so they will attack things that we look at and go, well, it's not really getting bad. Well, physiologically, it's going downhill, and we just haven't noticed it in our taste buds yet. So that's a feature, and they will get into literally any vegetable or fruit. Commonly in the wintertime, I get calls about them, and they, well, we took care of all the fruit and so on. Well, how about you got any onions? You got any potatoes? You got anything like that stored around? Oh, yeah, well, commonly they'll get into those. As well as things such as tomatoes and peaches and things of this nature. So apples. So usually what's involved is keeping those in refrigeration, has a double thing that you may not want to really think about. One is it protects them the cold temperature. Bugs don't normally fly at temperatures below 50 degrees Fahrenheit, so they're not going to get in and do anything or do much to that fruit when it's in the refrigerator in the 40s somewhere. They also don't develop at temperatures below 50 degrees. So if you happen to have some real young larvae in there that you can't really see when you eat the fruit, they're not going to get bigger to where you notice them. That may not be something you want to think about, but that's part of the fresh meat we get with our meals. But associated with that, it's primarily just the time of year in which things are ripening in the fields and so on, vegetation in various places, and with some of the rains that we've gotten in central Illinois and northern Illinois in the last night and a few days prior, that's going to make a lot of that vegetation start to rot. And outdoors, we're even going to have more fruit flies than we've probably had before. Again, elimination of fruit flies is getting rid of the food source, but you can also help get rid of adult fruit flies. They sell traps that are attracted to adult fruit flies. Some people find that they work pretty well for them. Some don't feel that way. maybe the freshness of a trap or the type of trap. But another thing that's a homegrown method is you can take a long neck bottle like a wine bottle and leave a tablespoon or so of wine or put some fruit juice in there or make your own booze with some fruit juice and some yeast and a little bit of sugar and lay it on its side, and the fruit flies will go in the long neck of a bottle, and then when they decide to fly, pretty much any fly or bee or wasp will tend to fly upwards to fly away. Well, they hit the top of the bottle. And it takes them a while to figure out how to crawl back out the neck. And so you can easily sneak up on them when there's a bunch of them in there not figuring out their way out yet. Cork the bottle, put it in the freezer for 3 days. That will kill all stages. Take the bottle back out, uncork it, set it back on the counter. It will attract again. No need to get rid of the dead flies. They'll rot in that material and make it even more attractive to more fruit flies. So you can harvest the adult fruit flies out of an area that way. And I know that's something a lot of people get problems with at this time of year. They're bringing in melons that they've grown in their garden or tomatoes or something like this. And they notice the fruit flies around. They just want to get rid of the adult flies and not think about what's actually living and what they're eating. And that's fine. Ignorance is bliss. But this type of trap will work pretty well on harvesting out the fruit flies and helping get rid of them.
All right. Phil Nixon bringing his unique perspective on nature to us here regularly on the program on Focus. He's a guy, he's an entomologist, and he specializes in helping people with insect pest problems. Could be in the house, could be in the garden, maybe something eating your vegetables, your ornamental plants, or just something bothering you in the house. You give us a description, tell us about it, and he will tell you how to get rid of it. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email at will-talk@illinois.edu. And here's one from someone who says that they have cobwebs showing up around their house in windows, corners, etc. They're also terrible on my screened-in porch. I'm assuming it is spiders. What can I use to eliminate them?
Okay. Spiders are going to be wherever the food is. And the food, in this case, are going to be insects for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so generally, particularly we get spider webs at this time of year, large orb webs, which are going to be a flat web, which is 2 or 3 feet across. And these are typically at this time of year, that's spun right across the outside door opening. And as you walk out in the morning, you get this face full of web. The webs are going to be many times around the outside of a building based on light. If you've got outdoor lighting that's around in that area, if it's shining around where the outside door is, things of this nature, that's anything you can do to reduce that light will reduce the number of bugs around that, and that will reduce the number of spiders taking advantage of that. When you get to, and I think the person that emailed in the question is more talking about them inside the house, and many times these are going to be Northern house spiders. They form a cobweb, which has web strands going every which direction, up in the corners of rooms and in the corners of windows and so on. And again, they increase as they get bigger. Most of those spiders are going to lay eggs within the next few weeks, and those will overwinter as young or as eggs and come out. And they have very small spiders, and the webs are very small and unnoticeable. Until those spiders get older and larger, which is right around now, and all of a sudden you start seeing these spider webs. Well, in all likelihood, unless you've been dusting the corners of your windows all the time, you probably missed a spider. Those spider webs have probably been there, but they've been smaller spiders, smaller webs, not really noticeable, and now they're getting big enough to be noticed. There are some materials. I know commercially people use have some enzyme type cleaners that will actually dissolve the silk web, which are used. And I think those are available over the counter to a certain extent. But the real answer many times is eliminating the spider itself. You can squish it. You can spray it with an aerosol, flying and crawling insect spray, actually flying insect spray. And this will kill them on contact. Just a little zap right there will nail them. That keeps the spider from building a new web the next night. But those are things that are happening, and they're going to be doing better with the number of insects that occasionally fly in through the open doors and windows that you've got, as particularly as you come in through the door. Those are going to go to the light, which is going to be, if there's no light on in the room, is going to be next to the window, and you've got good structure there with the window being there to build a web in, and so that's why they show up where they do, in the corners of the in the top corners of the ceiling. If you ever look at a bug that's around, they will tend to fly to the ceiling and bounce along across the ceiling until they get to the corner and then kind of be a little bit confused. Well, that's an ideal place for a spider to build its web, catch a bug when it's confused. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are why they're where they are. And there are some materials to help get rid of the webs without just knocking them down with a brush. Yeah. But you really need to kill the spider if you're going to want to have long-term answer to the problem.
Yeah, so that's interesting, because I'm sure that I have seen in my house, I have seen spider webs in what seem to be odd places, mm-hmm. and I've thought, well, what do you think you're going to catch up there? But I guess
the answer is where the bug goes.
The spider is smart enough to be where the bug goes. See, and then I guess if there aren't bugs there, then they'll go somewhere else. They'll go someplace else. Yeah.
Yeah, they're, unlike a lot of other people, I'm more apt to watch the moth on the ceiling rather than just try to hit it. And if you watch it long enough, it will tend to scoot around the top till it gets to a corner, and then it just kind of sits there for a while. Well, if you got to have a web right there, that's just an ideal place to nail bugs. And I wonder about some of these things. Why would a web be up in the corner? And then I finally figured out, well, that's, if you look at the way a moth or a fly gets into a room, that's what they tend to do. They tend to fly around till they end up in a corner. Well, if you got something to catch a bug there, you're in a great spot.
All right. Well, back to the phones here. We have some people. In fact, the lines are full, so we get right at it. And a champagne caller is next. Line one, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I started seeing some bugs in my house, and so I call a pest control people thinking it was cockroaches, and they said, no, these are Asian roaches. And, you've got some, bricks and stuff that you've piled up around the house. So just get rid of those and your problem will go away. So I did. I got rid of the bricks and stuff. And I'm continuing to see these guys. Now, the pest control guy said he didn't really want to treat for them. He thought they'd just go away. But I wondered what your take on this is.
What do they look like? What color and size are you seeing?
Well, I mean, I'm seeing a lot of babies, but
the bigger
adult
ones.
One is big, and he said it was an Asian.
Yeah, right? I don't know what he's referring to. That's why I'm trying to find out. They're about an inch and a quarter long, really dark brown, almost black looking, and kind of flattened.
Yes.
Okay. These are probably Oriental cockroaches, which I guess somebody could call Asian cockroaches. It's also known as a water bug. I always like to say,
water bug.
Yeah, if you own the apartment, it's a water bug. If you live in it, it's an Oriental cockroach. It's reason I was questioning is there's a type of close relative of German cockroach called the Asian roach, and those are only known in Florida. So I was just making sure he wasn't confusing them. The Oriental cockroach and a native roach called a wood roach are almost identical in appearance. Now, for me to identify the difference, I have to look at the spines on the inside of their front leg, believe it or not, to tell for sure. And wood roaches, you'll get an occasional nymph or even adult into a house, particularly in the basement or in a damp area such as a bathroom or something. And an occasional one is usually nothing that needs to be treated for because they're just coming in from the outside. And treating for it, your best bet is they don't run and hide real well. And so, the flat of your shoe works better than about anything else, and it's a whole lot less impact and cost. You can get Oriental cockroaches. They will tend to be associated with damp areas, too, in the basement and around in bathrooms and so on. They come up pipe chases around the outside of the pipes. And you keep them in the basement or crawl space by caulking around those pipes. In either case, many of these wood roaches will live in piles of debris outside the house, and that's probably where the gentleman was coming from. But Oriental cockroaches will live outside some during the summertime, too, particularly next to the foundation where it can stay a little warmer. And if it's Oriental cockroaches, they may have strayed away from it because it's a difficult roach to control. It takes about a year to grow up. It lives for about a year as an adult, and so any type of control program takes usually at least 2 years to get elimination or even close to elimination of Oriental cockroaches. And so some companies, because people will get frustrated with because you didn't make them get gone right away, they end up losing money on those jobs. So I think some of them kind of stray away from those type of jobs. If you happen to have a damp basement running a dehumidifier, any other thing you can do to reduce the moisture will reduce Oriental cockroaches, if that, in fact, what you have. And that will help. And then there are also bait stations sold for what they call large roaches, which will also work in areas where you're finding them. So whatever seems to fit, if you want to know for sure which one it is, take one to your local extension office. If they can't figure it out, they'll send it to me or send me photos of it. And if they're talking about, we'll have to take photos, tell them that the guy that's don't identify them needs to see the spines on the inside of the front legs.
Okay. And so if I do go with these bait stations, then I should expect about a two-year.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time to get rid of them. So they're a frustrating insect to get rid of, although usually they don't build up to very high numbers. They feed more on molds and mildews than anything else, and that's why. And they need high humidity to survive. That's why my suggestion on anything you can do to dry out high humidity areas will really aid to knocking them down. But that usually just knocks them down to where you see them only very occasionally. To get rid of them takes quite a bit of effort, and it's not a short-time job. The typical roach, a German cockroach, has a three-month life cycle, is only around for about 3 months as an adult. And as a result, you can normally eliminate them in about 6 months in a house. These guys, it's more like 2 years, and that's, you end up having, if you look at it from a pest control company's eyes, that's a long time to try to expect a customer to put up with a problem while they're eliminating it for you. Okay. So it's kind of like a nightmare waiting to happen for a pest control company.
Well, in any case, I mean, I'm pretty certain it's an Oriental cockroach.
Probably is.
Because he also called it a water bug.
Okay.
But what I'm wondering is there any point in doing anything around the outside of the house?
They will live around the outside. Typically, if you have mulches along the outside foundation, they will live in that over the wintertime and during the summertime. So removal of that and going to something that's not going to break down and hold moisture, more like river gravel or something like that, if you want something like that around the outside, is a better option. They will survive outside if there's a sewer nearby or even a storm drain, they may be able to get down in there and survive. But generally, they are subtropical roaches, and they cannot handle our winters if they're exposed to it. So anything you can do to make it sure that right next to the foundation where your warmth of your house gives them a little bit of help will help reduce the problem. They'll live in vines on the side of a house, although not very well. You've got to have a poorly insulated house to have enough bleed through to keep them alive in that area. They get down next to the soil and try to get a little cover and try to get a little warmth, and they can usually struggle through as long as winter doesn't get too cold. And so that's a factor, but the main source is going to be moist areas where your house is keeping them warm. So it's going to be inside the house, in the crawl space, in the basement, someplace where it's not getting, they can probably handle it down to 10 or 15 degrees, but anything lower than that, and they're cashing them in. So think of it that direction, and so most of your effort should be in the part of the house where you're heating it for them.
That's very helpful.
Okay.
We're taking questions this morning on insect pest problems around the home with our guest, entomologist Phil Nixon. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
I'm David Teal from WILL-TV. Join me this October for a Friends of WILL tour of London, Yorkshire, and Wales. We'll see stately homes and splendid scenery with connections to some of our most popular TV programs. Three-night stays in each of our locales offer us plenty of free time. Call us at 217-333-7300 or visit will.illinois.edu for more information.
Today's programs are made possible by Champagne Cycle, 506 South Country Fair Drive in Champaign. Champagne Cycle believes that bicycle use can play a role in making this a better world by decreasing pollution, reducing obesity, relieving traffic congestion, lessening dependence on foreign oil, and increasing personal fitness.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. We're here weekday mornings with 10 different topics. In the second hour today, Celeste Quinn will be talking with the journalist Pamela Constable. She's reported extensively on Pakistan for the Washington Post, and they'll be talking about a new book of hers, Playing with Fire, Pakistan at War with Itself. And then tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll be talking with David Eagleman. He is a neuroscientist at the Baylor College of Medicine, and we'll talk about a book that he's got out now. The title is Incognito: The Secret Lives of the Brain, that takes a look at the subconscious, that part of our brains that we're really not aware of. And the argument that he makes in the book is in fact that there's an awful lot that the subconscious brain has to do with who we are and what we are. So that's tomorrow. We're here weekday mornings, 10 to noon. You can check the schedule by going to our website. That's WILL.illinois.edu. In this hour, Phil Nixon is our guest. He's an entomologist. He works in the Department of Crop Sciences at University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. And his special area of expertise is insect pest problems around the home. So if you have a bug and it's causing you trouble, it's in the house or it's in the home landscape, give us a call, tell us about it, and he will see if he can help you out. And we'll go back to the phones. Next, we have somebody on a cell phone on our line 4. Right here. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
More an observational and trivia. I'm going to ask in a follow-up, has your guest noticed the absence in the last few years or the almost disappearance of a very common household pet that we no longer see? I should add, I live in the suburbs of Chicago, and this has held true for 3 to 4 years. I realize it's an unfair question, but a common household pet no longer exists with any regularity, and if you want to give up, I'll go to the answer real quick.
Well, we've had a reducing of fleas until the last couple of years due to people treating their pets with spot-on removers, probably than anything else. That's probably the one that comes to mind the quickest than anything else. I'm not sure what you're referring to.
And I realize it was an unfair question. I have noticed the almost total absence of the common housefly. And it's not just my observation. For the last 3 years, I pointed out to many friends, and they say, well, no, I saw one 2 to 3 weeks ago in the car. And I say, well, that's my point. You mm-hmm. remember the one a few weeks ago because it was so uncommon. I don't know if, and I realize this is not a scientific study, and I don't regularly live in Champaign. Has anybody noticed the absence? The housefly is no longer ubiquitous at all.
Well, I'm responsible for the entire state, so I cover your part of the state as well, although I'm sitting in Champaign. What we have is, if you realize, I think you can understand it, and I've noticed a decrease in them as well. I think if you realize what the housefly feeds on is a larva, you can figure out why this has probably happened. And for those of you who have weak stomachs, you may want to turn your volume down. but at any rate, houseflies feed primarily in manure, and were very, very ubiquitous and very much common before the automobile because of the leavings of horses in cities and towns and so on. They also will feed in garbage, rotting plant material and so on. And probably more than anything else, I am guessing here to a certain extent, larvae, if they dry out, that's their dead end on that. And so drier conditions, hotter, warmer summers, which we have had the last 2 summers, will tend to reduce the moisture in whatever decaying material that the larvae or the maggots are feeding on. That has a major factor. But I would suspect that probably what might have a major factor is the increase over the last 5 or 6, 7 years of maybe more than anything else, people, when walking their dogs, picking up after them, may have more of an effect than anything else, would be my guess. And it is just a guess. But that's a major manure removal situation, and that's a great reduction of fly habitat. We have taken care of the garbage because we have it picked up once a week, and flies, even in mid-90-degree temperatures, take at least 8 days to go from an egg to an adult fly, and usually much longer than that. And so weekly garbage collection greatly reduced over the last several decades of flies in this country. The automobiles greatly reduced them earlier a century ago, and so what's left is for something that grows up in manure. What's the biggest manure producer out there in urban environments? Probably pet dogs more than anything else, because the cats are burying. So the almost total pickup of fecal matter when you're walking your dog, which did not used to be a situation, in my opinion, more than 5, 6, 7 years ago. I think that's probably a major factor, but I'm guessing.
So you're, in order to preserve the housefly, you're arguing to get rid of the automobile and bring back horses and don't clean up after dogs.
Yeah, but you also have to realize, if you're wanting to preserve a housefly, you have to realize that a housefly, when it feeds on anything, regurgitates whatever it was feeding on before on whatever it's going to feed on, because the saliva has to liquefy the food for it to feed, which means if it was feeding on a cow patty before, it's regurgitating that onto your birthday cake. Makes houseflies humongously important in disease transmission, and so the reduction of houseflies is helping us be healthier as humans.
All right. Well, I hope the caller will forgive me now that we've grossed everybody else out. We have about 10 minutes left. I have a number of other callers. If we can help people with pest problems,
we'll move right through.
We'll move right along. Next, we'll go to Savoy, and that is line number 2. Hello.
Hello. Are there systemic treatments for bagworms?
Yes, there is a systemic treatment for bagworm. The only one I'm aware of is an acephate or orpheme formulation sold by Rainbow Tree Company as Lepitech, L-E-P-I-T-E-C-H is a brand name. I believe they sell that retail over the over their website, as well as some landscapers and so on invest in it. It's an injectable material into the soil, which will be taken up by the tree, lasts about 30 days, and will work on it. Some of the other systemics that you may be aware of, things we recommend for emerald ash borer, has imidacloprid in it, and it really is not effective controlling caterpillars. Okay. Works on beetles but not, and sucking insects, but not caterpillars. The Lepitech, which is an orpheme-type formulation, will go systemically through the tree from the soil and is effective, and that helps get rid of those bagworms at the top of very high trees, or particularly near a sensitive area that you really don't want to spray.
Okay, the Rainbow Tree Company.
Rainbow Tree, uh-huh.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. Well, and next caller is in Charleston, line number 3. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. Huh? I tuned in about 20 minutes late, so if you've already dealt with this, I apologize. We do not have a household pet. We haven't had one for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You can see where this is going. We have fleas.
Okay.
And we think that we brought them in from our sister-in-law's home because they started showing up. Now we're like, oh, my gosh, we never had this problem. We had a pet. We took care of it. We've used Flea Buster. We've thrown borax down. We vacuum every day. We're kind of at wit's end. Do we need to call pest control? Is there any other way to
there are some other ways to go about it. Fleas will live outside. They're dropped off by wildlife, by feral animals. And all it takes is to carry one in on your pant leg that happens to be a pregnant flea. She will drop a couple hundred eggs in the carpet, and away you go. And about every 6 weeks, you'll have another set of fleas come out. And without anybody else to feed on, any other warm blood, they will feed on you. They'll bite about 5 times to get a blood meal. They'll lay eggs. The larvae will tend to migrate to areas of a carpet and underneath side of upholstered furniture, more in a carpet, to where you do not walk. So what will happen is that for any type of treatment, the borax treatment has some effectiveness. I tend to lean more towards flea sprays that would be aerosols that say on the label that they control pre-adult fleas or egg stop formula or something of this nature. What this has is an insect growth regulator, which is a mimic of an insect hormone that humans do not have, that will keep the flea larvae from growing up and this should be applied to carpet and underneath side of upholstered furniture, particularly off lightly across the carpet, particularly along baseboards, cracks and crevices, underneath furniture. These type of areas where you don't walk is where the flea larvae are growing up. This will keep them from growing up. The material lasts and is effective for about 3 months. Typically, there is a insecticide in there that will kill the adult fleas. They do not kill the flea pupae, which means that the adult material will last for a week, maybe 10 days, and then you'll get the fleas back. You may need to treat again with just any flea spray or the same material again. And usually, because the pupal stage in an occupied house should only last about 2 to 3 weeks, that second spray normally knocks down the original adults, and then your growth hormone material will take out those larvae, and you will have eliminated the fleas in your house.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Good luck with that.
All right. Okay,
To line number one next, this is Champagne. Hello.
Oh, hi. I think my garage may have termites, and I admire colonial insects, but I think my garage doesn't. And I'm wondering, since I'm not sure whether that's what is actually there, is my best deal to call an exterminator? I'm a little worried that I might be told I need treatment, whether I actually need it or not.
Okay. Your best bet would be to contact a pest control company, an exterminator that controls termites or primarily controls termites. I would get two or three opinions if they feel that you need to have treatment, particularly if they can't produce evidence that termites were there. Generally, the termite side of the industry is relatively honest, and there's a good reason for that. If you mess up on a termite treatment, many times as a company, you're going to be almost essentially buying somebody's house. Your insurance company, after they pay for that house, will drop you. And then if you continue to stay in business, the next one bankrupts you, okay, as a company. So there's a good financial impetus to be honest in the termite business. They want to make sure that they do a good job of treatment, that they treat it right, because the stakes are very high if you mess up as a termite treater. I know your concern is treatment without really being needed. Generally still on the same side of a coin, it's been my experience, at least in Illinois, that if a company tries to sell you a preventative program, they will design it as that, not an elimination program for you. So there's a little bit of difference in what they do, not a lot, but generally they pitch it in an honest way. So I think particularly if you get three bids, you're not going to find three dishonest ones. You're going to find somebody who's going to say, you don't have termites, you don't need me. If you only come back in 3 years and check again, I would be loved to do that. You'll get one of those at least, and probably two, if not all three, out of that situation.
Okay,
if you don't need it.
Thank you. Thanks. That's very, very helpful.
Okay. Right. Okay. Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. I believe that chlordane is banned, but
right.
I heard from someone that there's still a good deal of it around, you know, in old containers.
Not very much anymore.
Okay. The reason this had come up is that someone had spoken to me about, persistent chlordane some houses, you know, in Champaign-Urbana that was at high enough levels to be of concern. When I heard about this, I was calling around trying to find out, you know, how could you determine this? I don't have any reason to think that it's the case for my house, but I'm sort of interested in it as a public health kind of thing.
I think any public health hazard that might have been there from chlordane residues still hanging around are rapidly disappearing. Chlordane was found to be effective in controlling termites for 35 years, okay? Although residues can hang on much longer than that, the point is that the residues that might be in the air could be a problem for that long, probably much less than that. The reason chlordane was taken off the market is it had been shown to cause cancer in laboratory animals, never in humans. And a properly treated house, you could detect very minute levels of chlordane in the air afterwards. Chlordane was taken off the market in 1987. You do the math, and you can see you add 35 years to it, and even if if treatment was done just before it was taken off the market, those residues are rapidly running out right about now. And although you could probably still detect chlordane in a treated house in very minute levels, for something that in that entire intervening time after chlordane was taken off market, as well as before that, no firm evidence or even very strong circumstantial evidence, to my understanding, of cancer showing up in humans associated with chlordane makes it unlikely to be a serious health problem. So I can have it tested. They will collect the air in the house. They can analyze it. It's probably going to cost you $100, $200 to have it do it, but I don't think you're looking at it. There's a lot more important health problems out there.
Yeah, I hope, again, caller, forgive me, I need to jump in. We're very short on time, and I'd like to try to at least get one more person here. We'll go to Aurora for this, and that's line four. Hello.
Well, yes, quickly, I was trying to do two things at one time. What did you say was good for?
You blocked out. What was your effective for what?
Well, you mentioned earlier about what was good for killing spiders.
Any aerosol flying in insect spray.
Oh, okay.
On contact. There's really, it's only spray dust that are effective against spiders crawling around. But in this case, it was webs where a spider would be easily found. For crawling spiders, we recommend any type of a dust type application will be most effective.
Okay. Now my next question is. About black ants.
Uh-huh.
Black ants? I have black ants probably inside my house.
What? Yeah, if they're large black ants, at least a quarter of an inch long, those would be carpenter ants. They are, if you're seeing more than a dozen per day at any time during the year, it's an indication you probably have a nest in the house and will probably be in an area that got damp due to a roof leak or a water drain pipe leak within the last 5 years. If you can locate that location and spray it directly or replace the wood, that should eliminate your ant problem. Pest control companies have baits for carpenter ants that they can be put out. I don't think that they are available over the counter, and that is another way that you can go approach the situation. Carpenter ants hollow out for the nest. They do not eat wood, so the amount of damage to wood in your house is usually limited to a foot or two along a 2x4. Nothing that's near as major as termites. Okay?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll try to go one more. Champagne, line two. Hello.
Yes, hi. I keep getting dates what the Terminix people have decided are called strange foreign beetles.
House,
little tiny brown things?
Probably foreign grain beetles.
Okay.
Foreign grain beetles will feed on molds and mildews, and particularly on new constructed houses, particularly those that are energy efficient. You'll have moisture that's outgassing from mastics and paint and so on that will build up in the wall. You'll get a mold situation in there. These beetles will feed on it. They will come out. Usually, once you go through a good, strong winter, if the humidity is not too high in the house, and you need to check to see if you've got a humidity fire running on the furnace all the time, maybe cut that off. The winter weather will normally draw the moisture out of a house, eliminate the mold, eliminate the beetles, and that's really about the only answer. For some energy-efficient houses, it may take 4 or 5 years for this to happen unless you're able to keep that humidity down and allow that moisture to get drawn out of a house during the wintertime.
Okay. I hope that helps. In any case, we're going to have to stop because we've here come to the end of the time that we have. In the meantime, if you have questions like this, you can always contact the extension person. Look in the phone book and find the extension person who is near to you. They can try to help.
Usually under the county and then under University of Illinois.
And if they can't, then they call this guy. Phil
right.
Nixon.
Anywhere in the state.
All right. Phil Nixon, he is an entomologist. He works in the Department of Crop Sciences. He specializes in dealing with household insect pests, and every once in a while, particularly here in the summertime, he's here on the show to help us out. Thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
WILL programs are made possible by Amber Glenn Alzheimer's Special Care Center in Urbana. Amber Glenn incorporates residents' past routines and interests into their daily lives, engaging residents in choices and daily living patterns. More information is available at 384-0100.
We're going to take a break, as we usually do at this point. Hour two, Celeste Quinn will be hosting the show, and she'll be talking with a journalist, Pamela Constable. She's a reporter, has worked extensively for The Washington Post covering Pakistan, and they will talk about her new book, Playing with Fire, Pakistan at War with Itself. That's in hour two. First, though, we'll take a break for an update on the markets and some news, so stay tuned.
Agricultural information on WILL is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, after a modest round of profit-taking earlier this morning, corn is managing to edge its way higher, although it's a little bit off the highs that it has made earlier in the session. We'll begin there with the current futures prices. September corn at 733 is up 2 3/4. It's been as high today as 737. December, 744 1/4, up 3/4. It's been as high as 748 3/4. March, 755 1/4, up 1/4. May, 758 1/4, up 1/4. July, 759 3/4, up 1/2. September soybeans are at 1386, down 3 1/2. November, 1393, now 92 3/4, now 92, yes, 93, balancing back and forth, down 4 1/4 to 4 1/2. January, 402 3/4, down 3 3/4. March, 405, down 2 1/2. May, 401 1/2, down 2 1/2. July is at 403 3/4, down 2. September wheat at the Chicago Board of Trades at 750, down 7 1/4. December, 776.